The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
2023 will be the end of the first playoff era. What will you remember? My name is Braden Gall, in for Paul. Paul Feinbaum Show here on ESPN Radio. And I sure hope everyone out there had a wonderful and amazing and spectacular Independence Day celebration. All I know is my 6 and 5-year-old daughters, one of them laid down on the balcony overlooking the largest fireworks show in the country in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, at my sister-in-law's house that could oversee downtown. She laid down on a metal balcony and fell asleep in the middle of the fireworks show and then missed all of her stuff this morning. So thank you, Independence Day, for making my daughters groggy, and I didn't have to deal with them because I sent them off to daycare today. So welcome to the show. We're talking college football, and I think there's a lot of different ways we can evaluate this playoff era, and we're taking your calls here momentarily, 855-242-7285. In part because I think this summer is so spectacularly interesting with storylines that we have not had in a while. What is going to happen with the Ohio State quarterback? Alabama could go multiple directions this year. They could absolutely surge back to dominance, and a coordinator and a quarterback combination could hit, and they could be the best team in the SEC. They could also go the other direction and lose 2 or 3 times, and I would not be surprised at that either. And then all of a sudden we're talking about 4 or 5 losses over a 2-year span for Nick Saban, which has never happened. Georgia, 3-peat. That's never been done since integration in college football. Never been done. And they're dealing with constant stream of distraction, new quarterback, new coordinator, tons of turnover on the defense last 2 years. Still elite, still great coach, still great roster, still the favorite. But can they do it? I don't know. Is Texas actually back? Is USC actually back? Can Jim Harbaugh finally get over the hump? What about a coach like James Franklin at Penn State? This is a very good Penn State team. Is Drew Aller, the superstar freshman, or the sophomore now, the 5-star last year, actually the answer? Is Florida State back? Can Dabo Sweeney find a star quarterback in Cade Klubnik at Clemson? The storylines are endless. It is the deepest SEC I can ever remember. Is LSU good enough to win a conference championship and get to the playoff? Like, we could just keep going, dude. Like, the list is endless for this season. And, oh, by the way, this is the end of an era for the SEC and for college football. It's going to be so different next year. 2 new teams, a whole new playoff format, no divisions for the first time since 1991. It's crazy. This is an extremely important summer in what is the end of an era in college football. And one of the two things that people are mentioning on the Twitters, you can get to me at Braden Gall. Yes, it's a sewer out there, but I'm going down with the ship, boys, okay? It is my drug of choice. I'm not on the gram. I'm not on TikTok, but I will go down with the Twitter sewer, okay? I'm going to go down with the ship on this one. But two of the things people are saying is two things. One, and I think this is smart, that it was just a really smart and good and quality step to the next level of college football. We went from the Bowl Alliance, whatever that was, to a 2-team playoff, the BCS. The BCS worked. It was fine. It did its job. It was a step to the 4-team playoff. The 4-team playoff was fine. It did its job, created some memorable moments. It was just a step to what is now going to be a 12-team playoff. And in that sense, both the BCS and the playoff did their jobs, right? And SEC on SEC action is basically what got us to both of those things, right? LSU-Bama 2011, well, now we got a 4-team playoff. We see enough SEC teams in the championship game, well, now we have a 12-team playoff. Thank you, SEC. We do appreciate it. But then the complaint about that is that it's going to devalue the regular season, and I just never understood the devaluing of the regular season. Football is interest-proof in this country. Like, we will watch football. Just tune in. Like, look at the ratings for bowl games. There's a reason that ESPN, that we put on 30 bowl games, because you will watch them. You will watch NFL preseason games. You will watch NFL games on a streaming platform. You'll watch college football games on Wednesday night in the MAC. Football will always be watched. You are never not going to watch the games. So I don't think expanding the playoff does a single thing to interest. In fact, I think it increases interest because it adds more value to more games. So I don't view it as a step in the wrong direction. So I know some of you are out there saying, oh, the BCS was better. Oh, the BCS was better. No way. No way. I view it as a step in the right direction. And I view the playoff era, the first version, this last 10 years, as the return of Georgia and the return of Clemson. I think those are the two headlines that I would take away from this particular playoff era. That might be my biggest takeaway. And that it was a step to the 12-team playoff. 855-242-7285. Let's go to Mark from Alabama. Mark, thank you for your patience and for holding. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I need to pull over here because I thought I heard you say that you think it's Clemson in Georgia, but let me just go over a few things real quick. factual with Alabama here. Let's not forget Alabama played for the title or lost the title in 8 of these games. So, and I'll go back, Ohio State in 14, they lost in the semifinals. They won it in 15, they lost it in 16, they won it in 17. This is Alabama, not Clemson, not Georgia. Clemson won it in 18, LSU in 19, Alabama in 20. Alabama lost it in 21, did not play for it last year. Now, go back to what you just said. Georgia and Clemson, and you did not say anything about Alabama. So here's my opinion, I got one. How about the dominance of Alabama in the BCS era? 3 out of 4 is the reason why they changed it. They got tired of Alabama winning. And then they go to this era, and here we go. I mean, am I making any sense? The dominance of Alabama in this era.
No, it's almost like it goes without saying, Mark. I think, like, the Saban era, the 15 years, like, I don't know how else other to define it than the greatest dynasty in the history of college football. Like, it's almost like Alabama's so good that they're not the headline anymore. Does that make sense? Like, and frankly, so much of their dominance happened before the playoff that it's almost as if playing for the national championship, winning 3 of them and winning 3 before that, like, it's almost – it was almost a story already, if that makes sense. Like, the playoff era didn't bring about Alabama dynasty. Alabama's dominance has been that way no matter what the system is. Whether it was Bear Bryant, whether it was the early 90s, whether it was Nick Saban BCS or Nick Saban playoff, Alabama's dominant, right? Does that make sense, Mark?
It does. I think a better question, I mean, it's a good question. I like the topic. You know, I really do. Is can an Alabama, can a Georgia – or Clemson, because, by the way, those are the only teams that have consistently won. Can any of those three, can they win consistently at this next new playoff level? And I knew Alabama would do well in this one we were just leaving, and that's true. But I think it would be more difficult to win consistently because of injuries. We saw that with Alabama. In the games they lost in these title games, close games. And I think you're going to have key injuries that will just knock you out of the playoffs. I was going to see if you comment on that, and I'll hang up and listen.
I do think that's a great question. Thank you, Mark. I think what's interesting about the new playoff is I think we're tricking ourselves into thinking that there's more contenders. But just because we're putting 12 in that we think there's more opportunity. But there's absolutely going to be upsets. There's absolutely going to be an 11 seed that beats a 6 seed, or a 6 seed that then wins in the second round and beats a 1 seed, or, like, there's going to be upsets. And because when you increase variables, you increase opportunity for things to happen. And that's not just NIL and portal, that is also injuries. And having to win 4 games or 3 games is more difficult than having to win 2 games. And when you increase the odds of something strange happening to your team, you decrease the chances of dominance. Now, do I still think the teams that are going to win the national championship more often than not are going to be the same? Yes. I think it's going to be the same programs that have won the national championship for the better part of 40 years. My lifetime. The last time a non-blue blood won a national championship in my lifetime, I'm 40 years old, was when I was 8. Georgia Tech and Colorado. Those are that 1990 split national championship, and one of them needed a 5th down to do it. Like, that is the last time a non-blue blood won a national championship. And so I still think that's going to be the case. It's still going to be the biggest, most powerful athletic departments and football programs winning the championships. But I think I think we have to rephrase dominance, right? Like, Nick Saban wins 6 national titles in 13 years, let's say. I don't think you're going to be able to do that again. But if you can, like, look at the Patriots dynasty. They went 10 years between Super Bowls. It doesn't mean they weren't still competing for championships. It doesn't mean it wasn't still a dynasty, right? So I think it's how we define the dynasty that changes. And again, part of the reason I would define this era as the return of Georgia and Clemson is because they were gone for so long. They were not irrelevant in Georgia's case, because they had some really good teams under Mark Richt and like, you know, but Clemson and Georgia were not national championship contenders for basically 35 years. That's a bigger story to me than, oh, Alabama won some more. And can those teams continue dominance is actually a different answer for all three of them. Kirby Smart's answer is, can you handle the pressure of winning? The answer for Georgia is, you are now facing what Urban Meyer faced at Florida and Ohio State, what Pete Carroll faced at USC. You are now facing what happens to every championship caliber program. Can you handle the distraction, the spotlight, and the entitlement? That's what happens with winning. Dabo at Clemson, the question for Clemson is, can he adapt? Can he evolve the program into the modern era of college football? He went out and hired Garrett Riley this year from TCU to try to do that. That is the first time he has looked at all like a person capable of evolving. Otherwise, Dabo has refused to acknowledge NIL. He's refused to acknowledge portal. He doesn't like this. He doesn't like that. The game's changing. Blah, 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 blah. Dabo has to evolve the way Saban did in like 2012. 2013. And then, you know, the question for Alabama is, how long is Nick around? And can they find their next Nick? That's the question for Bama, because, frankly, Bama is going to be a championship-caliber team no matter what, as long as they've got a good coach. That's just the way Bama works. 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. It is, in fact, the end of a college football playoff era. And we are discussing what we're going to remember about that. And one of the biggest parts of this summer is quarterback question marks, quarterback battles at all of the premier programs in our sport. It is fascinating. We're going to talk quarterbacks coming up next, right here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. Braden Gall in for Paul. This is ESPN Radio.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
How will you define the first ever playoff era of college football? What are we going to remember about 2014 to 2023? Because this is the end of an era this season. End of an era. Big topic on the show today, 855-242-7285. Your calls in just a minute. My name is Braden Gall, in for Paul here on ESPN Radio, the Paul Feinbaum Show. Chrissy Foy joining us here from SI. Chrissy, welcome to the show. How are you? Happy 4th.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And a big part of why I think this is one of the more interesting summers in all of college football's history, not just because we're sort of ending an era, but because we have so many questions at the most important position all across the entire country. And if I said to you, because I know you cover quarterbacks better than anybody, mm-hmm. can the Pac-12 quarterback save the conference is really my first question.
I think so. I mean, I think that we have a lot of good quarterbacks in this conference. And whenever we look at the SEC, which is covered by this network, it's a weaker class. It really is. I mean, we have a lot of guys that have potential. We have a lot of guys that have been ranked in the top 10 in previous years, but there's just a lot of question marks surrounding them. So, yeah, I think the Pac-12 is really interesting to look at. But as far as, like, conference realignment and all that goes, like, I mean, there's a lot of interesting quarterbacks to look at across all the different conferences.
Well, and I know you look at a lot of times you're looking at what these guys do well on the next level, and I think Caleb Williams is – most people would agree Caleb Williams is the best player in college football. Michael Penix seems to be much higher on draft boards from Washington. Bo Nix is a guy that SEC fans know very well but has turned into a superstar. We don't exactly know what the health of Cam Rising is going to be at Utah right now. But what is it about Caleb Williams? Is this a guy that at number one, number two, number five, number 12, like what does his pro projection look like in your mind?
Yeah, I've heard Caleb Williams talked about by NFL scouts and everyone else as someone who is going to be the best quarterback in college football to emerge from this this class just in general. And I think it comes down to we're witnessing a class that it's all about the pocket passer. Like, I mean, we've talked about quarterbacks with improvisation ability. We've talked about quarterbacks with mobility. We've talked about quarterbacks with this high ceiling. But I feel like for the first time in a long time, we're looking at quarterbacks who are first and foremost the best they can be from the pocket. And I think that Caleb Williams embodies that. Like, I think that you couldn't ask for someone who's better from the pocket. And I feel like that's what it comes down to. I think the NFL is realizing that, hey, we went on this Taysom Hill kick. We went on this mobility kick. But that's not what we need. And these quarterbacks that are super good at using their legs, they're not always great at passing from the pocket. And I think we see a phenomenon too with quarterbacks that are really good with using their mobility and things of that nature. They've been using it for so long from such a young age that they don't know how to be super great operative from the pocket. And I think that we're finally experiencing a transition from that.
So one of the, first of all, Chrissy Foy joining us here at Chrissy_Foy on Twitter. You can get to her there, SI as well. And I'm glad you wrote about Michael Pratt at Tulane. This is I've been a big Willie Fritz fan for a really, really long time. I'm glad to see him do what he did last season. What's interesting about Pratt is that they will host Ole Miss in week two. And I don't think people are talking enough about, like, this is the biggest group of five, power five matchup in maybe all of college football, or at least the toughest for anyone. And Lane Kiffin is saying, yep, sure, we'll go down there. I think SEC fans are going to learn a lot about Michael Pratt this year.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin tried to recruit Michael Pratt at FAU. I think Lane Kiffin would have tried to recruit Michael Pratt anywhere, even if it was Alabama. This is the epitome of what you want from a quarterback. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Michael Pratt. I mean, you have a quarterback who can use his legs when he is called upon, a quarterback who has the intangibles to rally a team and to move it forward to 12-2 after they went 10-2 the previous year because of who he is as a person. And I think that as far as accuracy, as far as moving the football with either your legs or through the air, you can't ask for any better than Michael Pratt. I mean, very smooth quarterback from lower body mechanics, the upper body mechanics and all of that involved. Used to be a pitcher in high school. And, I mean, he was homeschooled until he was in high school. And he made the transition very well. And, I mean, the transition from baseball as a pitcher, purely as a pitcher, to a quarterback is very hard. I mean, you have to shorten the release. You have to increase the anticipation, all of that on the throw. And he did that very easily. And I think between that and the homeschooling, then he moved forward at a very advanced rate. And I think it's a quarterback who reads his progressions very easily. I think it is a very good job. And I think that there's not much that he cannot overcome. And so I think he's a very mentally prepared quarterback who does everything right on the fly. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's a fun player. There's no question about that. Michael Pratt down at Tulane, by the way. Keep an eye on that squad. They'll host Ole Miss in week number two. You mentioned all the five-star guys, all the big names that are, you know, gonna take over. Some of them are young. You know, Connor Wigman in the SEC. Maybe it's Ty Simpson at Alabama. Tyler Buckner was not a small recruit, by the way. I think people think he's just some like random transfer. That's not mm-hmm. the case at all. And then you've got some veteran guys, you know, the Joe Miltons of the world that haven't really earned a starting spot but certainly have a ton of potential. Do you have a sense for who could actually be the breakout player? I hate using that phrase, but just, like, there's a mm-hmm. lot of reasons to like a lot of these players. Who are the one or two names in the SEC that have not established themselves yet that you think by the end of the year we are saying that is an all-SEC-caliber football player?
Yeah, well, Devin Leary of Kentucky was taking over for Will Levis. I mean, absolute star in North Carolina. And I don't think you could ask for much more from him. And I feel like whenever we look at him, we go, oh, Devin Leary was banged up. Devin Leary's been injured. And so he's fallen off the national radar. But he brings everything to the table you could ask for of a quarterback. And the other thing, too, is KJ Jefferson out of Arkansas. I mean, we look at him, and the thing that we think about is, oh, KJ Jefferson's a really big quarterback who's very mobile. Well, yes, but the thing, too, is that he's improved his completion percentage by roughly 10%. This is a quarterback who is hard to tackle, who is very good at throwing the ball at this point, and could be extremely dangerous moving on to the SEC, and not only through the SEC, but very just a preferred quarterback type of the SEC level and the NFL level, too. I mean, this is a quarterback that if he keeps on this track, is going to be very good and will be an instant star in the NFL. And then we look at, like, we talked about Connor Wigman. We talked about Carson Beck. I mean, these quarterbacks have a lot of very good potential. We don't know what they're going to be because they don't have a lot of experience. These are quarterbacks with a high ceiling, though, and at the same time, Spencer Rattler. We've all beat the drum with Spencer Rattler. We've talked about how good he can be, and he's failed time and time again, and that much is true. But at the same time, Spencer Rattler's struggles in my head have been mental. And I think he's finally moving past that. We look at Spencer Rattler throughout the SEC, throughout the time in South Carolina. What do we see in the back half of the season? Spencer Rattler is getting more comfortable in Charleston. He's getting more comfortable in South Carolina. And so these mental struggles are being eliminated. And so we see a quarterback with all the raw tools, everything he needs to be a very successful quarterback. And we wonder if Spencer Rattler truly settles in South Carolina, how good is he going to be? And the answer is, very good.
Yeah, I agree. If he's as good as he was in the final month, then watch out. If he's like he was in the first nine games, I have no clue. I have no clue. Chrissy, thank you so much. Happy 4th to you, and thank you for joining us. We do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Chrissy Freud. Yeah, I think, again, one of the reasons this is the most interesting summer that I can remember in 20 years of covering this sport are the giant question marks in the SEC at quarterback. Or I guess I should say, within teams that are very good. Ole Miss, are they going to have a star quarterback? Maybe. Alabama, you going to have a star quarterback? Maybe. Is Georgia got a star quarterback? Yeah, probably. But do we know for sure? Is Joe Milton great? I don't know. Maybe. Spencer Rattler, he is against Vanderbilt and Tennessee's defense. He's solid against Clemson. Can he do it for a whole year? I don't know. Is KJ Jefferson going to stay healthy? Connor Wigman, Jaden Daniels. If Jaden Daniels is a superstar, LSU could win the national championship. We just don't know how good some of these guys are going to be. But I know all the teams are pretty good. And that's what makes this year so utterly fascinating to me. I think we are in store for a bonkers season in college football. No idea who's the quarterback at Ohio State. How good can Michigan be? Is Texas back? USC? Is the Pac-12 back? I have no idea. Florida State is now the favorite over Clemson in the ACC. How fast did that happen? 2 years? Florida State's back? It's wild out there, folks. Your phone calls. How are we going to remember the final year of this era? 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. Your phone calls next. Braden Gall in for Paul. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Braden Gall in for Paul. We got lots of time for your phone calls, and you are loaded up, so let's roll. You can get to me, by the way, at Braden Gall as well. Jason from Georgia. Jason, welcome to the Paul Feinbaum Show. Sir, how are you?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great.
Yeah, I was going to call about the importance of the regular season, and that is what separates college football from any other sport. Now, it's not likely, but it's possible. Let's say Michigan, Ohio State play the last game of the season. One of them, their seed is pretty much locked in. I don't want to get to the point where some teams sit in half the players because they might benefit by having players not get injured or players that are beat up, and they decide not to play them because their seed is already locked in. Just like last year, Ohio State was crushed. They thought they were out. Now, they ended up getting in. But it's possible that in the 12-team playoff, that would not be the case. Matter of fact, I think it would be likely if they both come in with one loss that they're both probably locked in. So you could end up with a situation where that game does not matter. And we see it happen in the NFL, and that would be what we're sacrificing.
I think you're making a great point, Jason, because last year in a 12-team playoff, Michigan and Ohio State would have both been locked into the playoff. Yes. But I would disagree with the fact that they were playing for, quote, nothing. Because the top four teams are going to get a bye week. Then the next four teams are going to get a home game. And then the next four teams are going to get into the playoff. So there are three different tiers where it matters a whole lot. And what do we see at the end of the NFL season? Teams have clinched division championships. They have clinched playoff spots. They have clinched their spot in the tournament. And they are still fighting for seeding every step of the way. Rarely do you see an NFL team rest their stars in the final game of a regular season because they are already the one seed. And what I think you're doing is within the big – let's keep it within – you can pick a conference. I don't care. Like Tennessee, Kentucky, all of the sudden – becomes a potential playoff game. So while I see what you're saying, Jason, about the Michigan-Ohio State game, that maybe in that moment there's a little shine that's taken off that game. But there's still bragging rights. a Big Ten championship game appearance and seeding to play for. So there's still plenty to play for in that game. Oh, by the way, you hate each other, which is why we love the sport. So I don't think you're ever going to see anybody – like, coaches are fired if you lose the Egg Bowl. Like, you could both be 0-11, but you win the Egg Bowl every year, you're keeping your job. So, like, rivalries still dictate your career to some degree for these coaches. Now, do players maybe take a breath or two if they know they've already clinched a spot? Okay, I can see that. But by and large, there's still something to play for, in theory. And what you're doing is you are adding value to dozens of other games. A 52-51 Arkansas-Ole Miss game all of a sudden becomes a playoff game. You know, Tennessee-Kentucky this year, I think, is going to be a really, really big football game for both teams. In a season where both of those teams could get to 10-2, if that's what you believe about those two teams, well, the winner might get into the playoff and the loser might not. So what we're talking about is these teams with opportunities to get into the playoff that some would never have, some may come close. Again, think about Mississippi State and Ole Miss in 2014. So I also think football is interest proof. We are going to keep watching football no matter what. So I think all the games are going to mean even more. But that's my personal opinion. Dr. Bulldog from Louisiana. Doctor, what's up, man?
Hey, man. You know, great dialogue. You asked the question, what are you going to take most out of the bowls, the national championship, the Final Four, if you will. I think the fact that being a Bulldog fan, I think Georgia winning back-to-back with various losses in both consecutive years and Kirby Smart still making it happen, I take a lot out of that, man. And my buddy Jimmy in Tuscaloosa doesn't want to hear this. They better hope they make the SEC championship game so my Bulldogs can smash them because they got a hell of a schedule, A&M and LSU. And he likes to talk smack to people that disagree that Alabama's back. Well, I want to be first and foremost in saying Alabama's not back. And if Alabama does make it, Georgia's going to kill them, you know. And we played them on the road next year, and I'll be there. And I'm going to buy old Jimmy in Tuscaloosa a beer before and after we kick their asses, man. But it goes noted that I'm picking Texas. If any school can you know, knock Georgia off, it's a school that can spread them out wide with a great quarterback. You saw the LMI dude threw for almost 500 yards against us.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.